Track 17. Now to the Past Lives feature about the people who made the county great. Chris Armstrong investigates the life of the Swaffham-bred discoverer of Egyptian pharaoh Tutankhamun's tomb.
In the 1920s, Howard Carter became world famous, almost overnight, when he discovered the tomb of Tutankhamun in Egypt's Valley of the Kings. Born in London in 1874, Carter was the 11th child of parents who both hailed from Swaffham, where he himself spent most of his childhood in the care of maiden aunts. He was a sickly child and was probably homeschooled. Despite his fame, when he died in 1939, his funeral was attended by just 9 mourners, and his gravestone in Putney Vale Cemetery is relatively unadorned, no reference to any honours. He received none in his own country, although King Fuad of Egypt awarded him the Order of the Nile, 3rd class. Sic transit gloria. Carter's father was an artist specialising in the painting of animals, who sometimes undertook commissions for the Amhersts at nearby Didlington Hall. Lord Amherst was a great collector of artefacts relating to ancient Egypt, building his own museum to house his collection. A regular visitor was the young Ryder Haggard, who later disclosed that an object in the collection had been the inspiration for his novel, She. Howard Carter sometimes accompanied his father to Didlington, where his own talent as an artist attracted the attention of the Amhersts, who took him under their wing and arranged for him to join an expedition to conduct an archaeological survey in Egypt as an artist. He was just 17, totally unqualified, and had been reared in a quiet agricultural community. It is greatly to his credit that he coped so well with a new role in such a different milieu. His contribution to the work of the expedition was highly regarded. One aspect which attracted favourable comment was his ability to make pencil drawings of the images and inscriptions within the temples to the very highest standards. He continued in his work for 6 years before becoming Chief Inspector of Antiquities for Upper Egypt. His role was further extended to cover Lower Egypt, and he seemed to be destined for a distinguished career until, in 1904, he was involved in an incident which caused a diplomatic brouhaha. French visitors to the site at Saqqara, allegedly drunk, started to damage the huts and property of those excavating the site. The native workers resisted the French, and Carter encouraged their resistance until the police arrived. This support for native resistance so infuriated the French that their consul demanded an apology from Carter, which he understandably would not give. Although Egypt was not yet a British protectorate officially, it was effectively so, to the disgust of the French. But they retained great influence in matters relating to antiquities, and Carter was removed from his Lower Nile responsibilities as a result. Carter took umbrage. He was reputedly a stubborn man, not diplomatic, and inclined to be moody. He also lacked friends who might have helped him to come to terms with what had happened. Instead, he resigned and went to live in Cairo, where he supported himself by his painting, by acting as a guide, and dealing in antiques. His fortunes took an upturn when, a few years later, under the patronage of Lord Carnarvon, who valued his scientific approach and his assiduous recording of discoveries. This relationship continued for some years, but went into abeyance at the start of the First World War, which must have been frustrating for both parties, because in 1914, encouraged by Carter's belief that there was still much to discover there, Lord Carnarvon had acquired the right to excavate in the Valley of the Kings. It was 1917 before any serious attempt could be made to follow up on Carter's theory, but what followed was nearly 5 years of disappointment, with only relatively minor finds. Carnarvon was running out of patience and told Carter he was disinclined to invest further. There was a rumour at the time that his disinclination to continue sponsorship was partly because he was concerned that Carter, by then 48, might be forming a relationship with Carnarvon's daughter, Evelyn, a 20-year-old debutante. I have not found, while researching Carter, any suggestion of other romantic relationships. Certainly, Evelyn, who shortly became engaged to another man, later denied absolutely that such a relationship had ever existed, and claimed that she actually found Carter frightening. Interesting to note, though, that Eveling was one of the handful of mourners who attended Carter's funeral. Whatever the cause of Carnarvon's disinclination to fund future expeditions, he was persuaded by Carter to fund just one more. And, almost immediately, Carter at last located the tomb of Tutankhamun. Rather romantically, perhaps, his discovery was said to have been almost accidental, the first of a series of steps being found when a young water boy tripped over it. Summoned by telegram, Lord Carnarvon and Evelyn rushed out to Egypt, where the impatient Carter awaited them. The story generally accepted at the time was that when they arrived, less than 3 weeks after the telegram, Carter accompanied them to the site where they cleared rubble from the stairs and opened an outer doorway. They then cleared more rubble from behind the door to reveal a further door to the tomb itself. Carter then used a chisel to make a small breach through, which, with the aid of a candle, he could discern gold and other ornaments, which, in a much-quoted response to Carnarvon's question, he described as wonderful things. Very properly, goes the story, they then resealed the tomb and reported their find to the Egyptian Department of Antiquities, whose representative came to inspect the tomb with them the very next day. The inspection revealed not just Carter's wonderful things, but also two additional chambers, one of which, behind a sealed door, was the burial chamber itself. 2 days later, in the presence of the great and the good, the tomb was formally opened. Thousands of items were discovered, and Carter was charged with removing and recording them. It took 10 years. Carnarvon didn't live to see the task completed, dying just a few months later, giving rise to the story of the curse of the tomb. Probably none of the parties were entirely happy with what happened next. Carnarvon's family did not get the financial rewards which they felt considerable investment over the many years deserved, while Carter was frequently frustrated by the attitude of the Egyptian authorities. There are three not fully answered questions about Carter's discoveries. Was he actually aware of the location of Tutankhamun's tomb before the publicly announced discovery? Did he, with others, actually break into the tomb and seek to disguise that he had done so? Did he remove artifacts from the tomb without declaring them? The first relies upon the fact that Carter had been working very close to the site some time earlier, and then had moved swiftly elsewhere, having built a wall, which to some extent covered the steps leading to the tomb, and that, on his return to the site, having persuaded Carnarvon to fund one more attempt, he had, miraculously, discovered the tomb within days. It was argued that he had been saving up this treat, rather like a child leaving his favourite chocolate in the box until last, and that he had only displayed his hand now, because he feared losing Carnarvon's backing. Against this, one could argue that acknowledging the discovery earlier would have ensured continuing sponsorship and enabled Carter to claim his place in the sun sooner. So why delay? The other questions have been the subject of some debate for years. There has long been a belief in some quarters that Carnarvon, Carter and Evelyn did actually have a sneak preview the evening they arrived. It has also been suggested that they may have been attempting to produce an impression of there having been earlier grave robbers thousands of years before. This was important because, apparently, the rules relating to such excavations were rather strange. All artifacts belonged to Egypt unless the grave could be shown to have been previously tampered with, in which case they could be shared with the archaeologists. In 2010, a German newspaper categorically asserted that not only had Carter broken in himself, but had offered, as evidence of previous historic plunder, a photograph of a footprint in the chamber. The snag, the paper reported, was that the print was actually of a modern shoe with a heel, not an early sandal. The only supporting evidence appears to be the belief that Evelyn wrote Carter a note later, which could be interpreted as thanking him for arranging the alleged private viewing. The third question, as to whether Carter misappropriated artifacts, looks more of an open and shut case. Henry Burton, his executor, certainly thought so, identifying around 20 items in Carter's collection which he believed had been taken from the tomb without authority. Burton was in a position to be able to identify them. He had spent nearly 10 years taking over 1,400 photographs of the relics discovered in the tomb at Carter's request. Burton acted cautiously and quietly. Over time, some of the items concerned found their way back to Egypt. Against the allegations that Carter was a little light-fingered in the tomb, needs to be set the fact that on a number of previous excavations, he had thwarted the attempts of others to steal artifacts. The existence of these questions takes nothing away from Carter's skill, methodology, and determination in uncovering the tomb, but it's possible that the very fact that they were asked at all may have influenced the failure of the British to award him any honours or of any British university to confer an honorary doctorate. And that is sad, because his discovery has given interest and pleasure to so many. The Swaffham Museum has a room dedicated to Howard Carter with information and artifacts.